Year you may not know, but it's the 50th anniversary of the Charlie Brown Christmas special. I tell you what, I'm not going to get into if anyone remembers its first running, anything like that. I don't remember that one. But, you know, the Charlie Brown Christmas special, I was reading about it in USA Today, and you see what was said. If you want Christ in Christmas, you pretty much have to turn to Charlie. Of all the Christmas specials that we have that run during the course of the Christmas season, Charlie Brown is pretty much it if you want to hear the name of Christ, if you want to hear about Jesus. I think that's why that one is so special to me and so special to us. And I just love the idea that someone would say, well, if we're going to talk about Christmas, we're obviously going to talk about Christ. You may not know this. You may think it's Easter. We sometimes say that Easter is the pastor's Super Bowl. But it's actually Christmas time when we see more visitors come into the life of a church than any other time of year. Why is that? Well, you know, some of them are probably, like Charlie, looking for something beyond the commercialism. They're looking for something deeper. They want to know, is God really knowable? And does he actually know what's going on in my life? Because otherwise, there's a million things that we can think about at Christmas time, a million things that can distract us. And today, we're going to see a familiar story, but I hope something that really encapsulates the idea that people need to seek Christ at Christmas time. Some of them are aware, and some of them are not. And as we see these wise men in Matthew chapter 2 today, we're going to learn what their motivation was, their difficulty in finding Jesus, and finally, their ultimate response to the Son of God. Yes, I am being Southern Baptist this morning. I have 3 points. All right. But I promise you, they came out of the Scripture and not out of my need to have 3 points. So let's take a look first at Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 2. We're going to see this motivation. It says, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men," or magi, "from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him.'" So first we need to understand, who were these wise men? Now, some of you know I like history, and I could talk about this after all my reading and study about these guys for probably half an hour, and I'm not going to do it, so praise Jesus. Because Jesus needs to be lifted up, not the wise men. But you need to know who these guys were. Now, these guys came from the east, but where exactly did they come from? Well, they were a part of an awakening Persian Empire, what today would be Iran. And so they were coming from the east, and these guys had kind of a dual role in their society. There's a reason they were called wise men. Number one, they had kind of a priestly role in the occult practices of the Persians. So they were kind of like the priests of the religion that the Persians followed. But secondly, they had a dual role. They were astrologers and astronomers. They were constantly looking at the sky. Now, they thought they could look and see the stars, and based on when you were born, they could tell you something dramatic about your life. Side note, if you're getting the horoscope of the day, just switch to reading Charlie Brown. It'll do you a lot more good, okay? So these guys are constantly looking at the stars, so when a new star pops up, this gets their attention. Hey, we're looking at the stars. There's a new star. What in the world does this mean? And for me, I start thinking, okay, these guys are living over in Iran. What is their motivation to look for a Jewish king? I mean, why do they care? Why would they see a star and know from hundreds of miles away that that means something? Well, this is where our knowledge of the Old Testament is helpful. The Bible tells us that back when that area was being run by the Babylonians, these wise men, these magi, were there. They existed beyond different kingdoms. And during the time of the Babylonians, you may know this guy named Daniel. And Daniel was a guy that could interpret dreams by the power of God. In fact, he was raised up to the head of the magi. And so you had this Jewish influence. Well, later, the Persians come and they defeat the Babylonians, but, you know, the people still exist. The Magi are still there. And the Persians were the ones who began sending Jews back, saying, well, the Babylonians conquered you and brought you here, but we don't really want you here. Go home. Well, a lot of them went home, but some of them had married, had really put down roots. So some of them stayed in Persia. And so for years later, you continued to have a Jewish religious influence going on in the area where these wise men lived. And so they would have had access to scriptures. Access to scriptures like Numbers 24:17, where it was prophesied, a star will come out of Jacob, one who will exercise dominion. A prophecy about Christ. So these guys would have had access to this because of the Jewish influence. So that's why a star pops up and guys from hundreds of miles away go, hey, there's something going on here. We want to figure out what this is. And these wise men coming into Jerusalem, like we see in Matthew chapter 2, is not as you imagine it. Now, yes, now that I've left my previous church, I can confess I was the one who used to remove the wise men from our nativity scene in the church. Okay? They don't belong there. And so I would usually, they always set up, and the ladies who set it up were so wonderful, but they'd set it up and they were the wise men, and so I would go over and I would take them, and I would take them like across the sanctuary and hide them somewhere. And Pastor Lee knew that it was always a running joke. He said, you know, if they ever find out that you're hiding the wise men, so I'm not hiding the wise men, I'm just being biblical. They weren't at the stable that night. I hope I didn't just destroy your Christmas. But listen, the Bible's really clear. They weren't there that night. And as they come in, we don't even know that there were three of them. Sometimes we think there was three because they brought three gifts. But in reality, these guys coming to town would have been an impressive sight. They would not have been coming in by themselves. In all likelihood, there would have been hundreds, if not 1,000 different cavalrymen protecting them, because that was a dangerous stretch to come from Persia to Jerusalem, and many different attendants. So these guys coming into town, asking where your king is a little bit disconcerting. That's why these people are going, we don't know what you're talking about. And in verse 2, we see the question, we see the motivation for why they make this trek across the desert. Verse 2, they're asking, where is the one who has been born the king of the Jews? So we see their motivation, but now we're going to see the difficulty. Let's take a look at the difficulty. Matthew chapter 2, verses 3 through 4. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. Now, depending on what translation you have here, the words can be a little bit different, but they all mean the same. Herod and the whole city are troubled, they are disturbed, they are agitated. Someone has come in and messed up their nice, quiet lives. Now, why would Herod have been troubled? Well, he knew who these magi were. These guys are the kingmakers. In fact, if you were in Persia and you wanted to become king, there were two requirements. One of them is you had to learn these religious and scientific disciplines that the Magi practiced. That was the first requirement. But here was the second one. The Magi had to choose you as king and put the crown on your head. So when kingmakers come into your town where you're king and say, we're looking for a king, that's troubling. You don't want to hear that. And so Herod is troubled. We understand this. And these magi are looking for the king of the Jews. I did a whole lot of reading and research that just got me excited. And again, I'm going to spare you from. But it turns out Herod had only received this title 1 year before from Rome. He'd only been called the king of the Jews himself for a year. And now someone's come in saying, where's the king of the Jews? He's like, I'm right here. No, the one born the king of the Jews. Uh-oh. So Herod is troubled. He is disturbed. He does not like that someone is coming in, because for Herod, he's like many people in the world today. I don't want a king. I'm my king. I tell me what to do, and I'm pretty happy with that. So all across our world, we have people who aren't necessarily unaware that a king has been born. They just say, I don't really want a king. Or they'll tell us, you know, the reason I don't believe in God is because I'm not as weak as you. I don't need that crutch. I don't need a crutch either. I need a spiritual wheelchair. I don't need a crutch to lean on. I need to completely be carried by God because I recognize I am weak. I recognize the only reason I can be a good anything is because God makes that possible in my life. So we see why Herod is troubled. He is troubled because he doesn't want a king. But these people are troubled for a different reason. When you look at all the way back at verse 2, at the very beginning, it says that they were saying, "Where is he who has been born the king of the Jews?" The Greek indicates that they were constantly, repeatedly saying this. They didn't just walk into town and said, "Where's the one born the king of the Jews?" They're going to people, "Hey, do you know where the king of the Jews is?" "I don't know what you're talking about." They go over here, "Do you know who the king of the..." "What are you talking about?" They're going around town. No one knows who this is. These people are completely unaware of what they're even talking about, which is why Herod calls in the priests and says, "Do you know what these guys are talking about?" They're like, "Oh, yeah. You know, it was prophesied that this guy would come and, you know, he would become, you know, the king and everything." Herod's probably like, I would have liked to have heard that yesterday. Something. Help me out. It makes me think of later on when Jesus has his ministry in John chapter 3 and he's talking to Nicodemus. And Nicodemus, one of the priests, one of the teachers, he's asking Jesus, "I don't understand this whole Messiah thing." And Jesus says, "You're a teacher of Israel, and you have no idea what I'm talking about." And that's what was going on here. These people truly didn't understand. These Jews were living a nice religious life. Everything was comfortable. "We're going to church, we're having a good time, I'm not messing with you, you don't mess with me. Now you're saying there's a king, there's someone who's supposed to be ruling my life." These people were neither ready for nor even watching for a Savior to come. They had absolutely no idea. Because some people don't want a king, and some people just don't know they need a king. And we've experienced both of those people. Perhaps we've been those people at times. Perhaps you are one of those people right now. There came a point I had to recognize I need a king. In fact, I want a king. I want someone to come in and change this mess that is Heath. Because I've been trying for so long, it's not happening. So in the same way, for whatever reason, many people are troubled by our worship at Christmas time. I got to go to a birthday party yesterday here for little Freddie, 2 years old. What were some of the great things we had at the birthday party? Balloons. Love some balloons. Cake. You know what? For those of you who are health conscious, don't cut out cake at birthday parties, okay? It's in the Constitution. You have to have cake, okay? And I'm thankful that Freddie's family was respectful of, you know, our ways. You know, so there's cake there, and you know, you might have streamers, you have decorations. You know what else you have there? A birthday boy. A birthday girl. There's somebody that you're... No one ever just shows up, "Hey, there's cake. There's balloons. There's streamers. Okay." No, there's a reason for that. And there are a lot of people who want the party at Christmas, but they're missing the point. And you know, part of the reason they're missing the point is because I haven't told them enough. And you haven't told them enough. We have to start looking and saying, the world can't truly take Christ out of Christmas. Think about that. We say the world is taking Christ out of Christmas. No, they're not. Just because they're being silent about him doesn't mean I have to be. My noise can fill that void. Their silence should be countered by my shout. Not shouting them down, but shouting Jesus up. That's what we need to do more of. Do you think? We need to start saying less about, "Well, you know what? You're just dumb taking Christ out of Christmas." How about instead of that, we say, "You know what? You just don't know how great the birthday boy really is. You don't know what you're missing." Because you know that emptiness you feel on December 26th, or for some of us, December 25th at around 10 a.m., when it's all opened up,
And now we're like, well, who's going to clean this up? You know the emptiness you feel? I don't feel that. Because I recognized my Savior hasn't just come and now I just put him back in the box and we'll pull him out next year. No, he is alive. He continues to be alive. And because he's alive, I'm alive. Not just right now, but for all eternity. I'm so thankful that Christ has given me that. That's why we celebrate the Lord's Supper. We're remembering without the sacrifice that Jesus made, not that he just died, but then he rose again. Without that, I've got nothing. We should all just go home and be depressed together. But there is a point to the party. And you look at these men, they're walking into the heart of Judaism. They're walking into the heart of where everyone should be talking about the Messiah, and no one knows what they're talking about. No one has any clue, any idea that there is good news for all people, new life available. Your sins and your past can truly be forgiven. That's better than any present you will give or get this year. We have to be ready. So when these wise men finally get the details, Herod finds out where Jesus is going to be born and says, oh, well, I'd really like to go worship that kid. When you find him, let me know. It's a secret meeting. Listen, you can't be a secret worshiper of Jesus, by the way. He has a secret, oh, I really want to worship Jesus. I'm just going to keep it kind of on the down low. You go find him and let me know, and I'll come worship him. That'd be great. But Herod has no intention. He wants to get rid of this king. Well, let's look here, Matthew chapter 2. Go to verse 9. We see their response. It says, Matthew 2, 9. After listening to the king, the Magi went on their way, and behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. That means they're really excited. That should happen at Christmas time. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and they worshiped him. Jesus isn't in the stable anymore. His family has made a move over somewhere elsewhere there in Jerusalem. We don't know how old he is. It could be a few weeks. It could be a few months. But we know that Herod has all the boys from 2 years old and under all executed because they could potentially be that king. So some time has passed. It took a while for these guys to get there. But what do they do when they arrive? They walk in and they worship him. That's a word that means they get down and they are just, this is somebody completely different from me. And they worship him and they recognize he is somebody different. And you know what I love? The worshiplessness, I'm not sure if that's a word, but we're going to use it, of the Jewish people didn't stop these guys from worshiping. They didn't look and say, well, you know, they're not very excited about it. I guess there's probably just nothing to get excited about. No, we know something's going on. And so they make the move and they go there. And I think about this because the Bible's really indicating that while these guys are the kingmakers, they're not coming there to put an earthly crown on him. I mean, I think about these guys. How many failed kings had they put crowns on, maybe? How many? It could be. Could be 100. How many times did they put a crown on somebody and say, well, this guy's going to be it, and now he's not. And you know what? Who or what are you putting crowns on? The next president? Oh, that'll fix everything. Yeah. Oh, if I made a little bit more money, I'll put a crown on that. That's all I need, just a little bit more. I just need this, and then I'd have everything. I'm going to put a crown on that. That'd be my king. It's all garbage. It all leaves you wanting. What'll happen after you get that salary bump? Boy, you realize you need another one. Boo. What happens if you get that new president? We always start, well, who's it going to be in 2020? Good grief, just let me breathe. I'm still contemplating the fact I'm going to start writing 2016 on my check soon. That's not going to happen. I know it's not going to happen. I think I wrote 2007 on a check this year. I don't even know what was going on. I don't know what was happening in 2000. I graduated from seminary. I don't know what was going on in 2007. But these guys, they're not coming to make Jesus the king of Persia. The Bible's indicating they're coming and they're crowning him king of kings. Here's a guy who's never going to disappoint us. Here's a guy we'll never need to do a recall on. Here's a guy that we can trust. We can give it all over to him. That's awesome. I bet there are a lot of people, if they knew this Christmas that there was really somebody they could give everything over to, they might be more willing to hear that message than you think. I need to stop saying no for people. You know what I mean? Well, they don't want to hear about Jesus. I guarantee you one day, no matter what their response will be, standing before God, if they've come to know him because, they'll probably be pretty glad that you shared about Jesus. And these three responses, these three situations, they bring up three questions for you and I from this passage today. What is your motivation this Christmas? Truly, what's your motivation? Is your motivation to try to outgive the other aunts and uncles? I see that sometimes. That makes no sense to me. Well, I'm going to give them something better. Now, maybe if I was the receiving niece or nephew, perhaps I would be more prone to not push that aside. But, you know, every year we see it. People accrue tremendous credit card debt at Christmas time. And then January comes and it's like, oh, Christmas. That's awful. If our motivation was wrapped up more in elevating the King of Kings, we probably wouldn't find ourselves with that Christmas slump. Oh, Christmas. You got to put all the stuff away now. You know, if you really recognize there's a party here, you know what? After a real party, you're like, hey, we'll put this stuff away. That's fine. We had such a great time. So excited. Can't wait to do it again next year. But you know, we need to say, what is my motivation? Is my motivation this year just trying to take care of the lists and the stuff? Or is my motivation that Jesus Christ would really be my king this year? And speaking of that, you think about, how will you remove difficulty for people looking for Jesus? Realize, these guys were coming in basically begging, tell us about Jesus. And they say, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Maybe some of them did, but well, I don't know enough. You know, I didn't go through all those Old Testament classes. I don't know that Numbers verse, so I can't share that much. But I tell you what, if you can share about Jesus, you can share enough. You know, we always worry about the questions people are going to ask. The only question I had the night I got saved at 12 years old is, are you sure that Jesus dying on the cross covers all my sins? Because I got some bad stuff going on. I just need you to tell me you're sure. No, I'm not sure. The Bible is. Good enough for me. And I found that to be true. That Christ has shown me this great grace. So if I understand that I have received an amazing gift that no one's ever going to trump, how am I making it easier for other people to hear that message? Am I making it hard just by keeping quiet? It's just about living intentionally. And listen, there's no one I'm beating up about this more than me. I need to be more intentional. I have to walk out the door, even if I'm going to go down to the grocery store to get ice cream. I need to say, God, help me to be ready to talk to anybody I might meet. I find sometimes if you go late at night to get ice cream at the grocery store, the checkers sometimes are really talkative. There's nothing going on in there. You can get into conversations with people. You know, the other day I had a plumber come out to my house. I was like, okay. You know what? I'm going to go up there. I'm just going to hang out in the bathroom with him. Sounds a little weird, you know, but that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to look for ways to be more intentional. I'm going to look for opportunities. I'm going to stop saying I don't have them. I'm going to start taking them when they're there. Because otherwise, I'm just adding to the difficulty. So listen, there's no one in here who's wrestling with this more than me. But then this final question is, how will you respond to Jesus at Christmas? You see, it's easy for us to presume that everyone in here has firmly placed the crown of our life onto Jesus' head. But you could be like me when I was 12 years old going to church, and that crown was still on my head, snugly. If you don't understand that Christianity is really taking the crown off and saying, Jesus, I want your forgiveness, I want your direction, I want the new life and the promise of eternity, that's what it is. That's Christianity, is that you recognize your weakness and you say, Jesus, give me your strength, give me your forgiveness. If you find yourself troubled and worried at Christmas time, I'm telling you, this is the best thing that could happen today, is that you heard this message. Because Jesus died for you. You mean my junk? Yes, your junk and my junk. Sins can be forgiven if we will admit we're a sinner and that we need the salvation of Jesus. But for the rest of us who perhaps have already placed the crown on the head, this Christmas, do you find yourself troubled by different things? Listen, don't allow what the world says is important to be what you're going to make important. Well, I got to get my kid this. I've got to get my kid that. Nikki and I were really remembering this week a really lean time in life with young children. And I remember that we didn't really have money to go out and buy presents, and so that year, my wife, because both of our kids, our Tyler and Caitlin, were kind of in a superhero phase. They were really little. And so Nikki was able to, you know, buy a little bit of cloth and make capes for them. And I felt like garbage as a dad. I was like, I'm not getting them a Tickle Me Elmo. I'm not getting them this. I'm not getting them that. We're giving them capes. What kind of people are they going to turn into wearing capes on a regular basis? And so Christmas morning comes, and I mean, I'm in agony because I can't give my kids these great gifts that I know that at, you know, 5 or 4 or whatever they were, they absolutely needed to have. And they woke up that morning and they unwrapped their capes and they were just like, capes, yes! Capes, yes! You know, and I'm just like, seriously? How can you like this? It doesn't even take batteries. It makes no noise. That Christmas really changed my outlook. I realized, you know what? If my kids know that Christ loves them and that that love motivates me to love them, I could probably give them a rock and get away with it. Because how would I think about my parents in a lean year? Not buying me the brand new Xbox or not buying me this. Seriously, Dad, I'd be up there in their face about it. They'd say, thanks. Just thanks for loving me. I don't know how you feel this Christmas. I don't know how Christmas affects you, but listen. Jesus Christ, he is the King of Kings. And no one can take Christ out of Christmas. It is not possible. And the next time you hear someone saying, well, you know, I don't really celebrate that religious stuff. You don't say, oh, well, I better be quiet. No, talk about Jesus. You don't have to tell them how dumb they are. Don't shout people down. Let's shout Jesus up.